golfj.com.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Happy Memorial Day. Welcome to a special holiday edition of the GolfJ.com podcast on FingerLakes1.tv. I'm Jim Sincropy alongside the captain, Doug Brown, here inside the FingerLakes1.com studios in Seneca Falls. Monday, May 30th, 2016. Memorial Day, where tonight we're going to be talking. Well, first of all, Rhett's not here, Doug, because he had a migraine headache. So, he's probably not home watching. He's got a migraine. But he'll be back next week, I'm sure.
Okay.
Should mention why old Rhett's not here. Show his.
I wish him well.
So tonight, got a great show. We're going to talk about Jordan Spieth's first win in his home state of Texas as he takes the Colonial. Give you a quick review of a great little range finder available online for just $110. And what's the best way to select the clubs that best suit your game? You're going to go buy some clubs. We want to talk about, you know, what you should be looking for to suit your particular game. And we're getting closer to the U.S. Open. So who's the favorite? We'll talk about that. And we'll preview the great field at the Memorial, have some trivia, and much more. So, Brownie, let's get right started with Jordan Spieth's big win. I know we were talking about just last week about his struggles, and the reigning FedEx Cup champ was a popular topic for throughout the media for the past 4.5 months between his victories at the Hyundai and this week's Dean and DeLuca Invitational. So the speculation comes with the territory, I suppose, after what a great season he had last year.
Right. Well, he made everything seem to go his way last year. His struggles this year, I think it's a lot more ball striking than anything else, but his putting hasn't, chipping and putting hasn't been as sharp as it was last year, but it sure was this past weekend, especially on Sunday.
Yeah, it's amazing to me watching him play the past couple weeks, because he was in contention last week,
right,
until the final round, is
right,
how poorly he hits it compared to the rest of the field,
right,
that he can still be up there. And I felt that way even into the final round, you know, where you would expect a guy to win a PGA tournament to be hitting fairways and greens consistently, but that's not the way Spieth wins. And that's probably why he's had such success in the majors.
Totally agree. You know, statistically, I think from 25 feet, from like 15 to 25 feet, he's the number one putter on tour. Makes an awful lot of shots from that range. So that makes up for an awful lot of misses or getting out of the rough out of a bunker, things like that. I don't think his driving is very accurate. He tends to miss to the right most of the time. He's not very long, never has been. But yet, he gets it in the hole, which is all that really matters.
Putting is the one thing that, you know, clearly I think separates him from,
right,
the rest of the field, the best putter in the world probably.
I think so.
And it just goes to show you, drive for show, putt for dough, I,
right,
guess, that you can slap it around. I mean, literally, last week especially, he slapped it around.
He sure did.
So,
just the last nine holes Sunday, he had 9 putts. And when they turned, there was a three-man race with him and Ryan Palmer and Webb Simpson. And even one of the announcers said, it's going to boil down to putting.
Sure.
And it did, and it sure did. Those guys didn't putt poorly, but Jordan made everything, plus a chip in on 17.
Yeah, and he's one of the top players in the world, maybe, you know, arguably, along with Jason Day at this point, the best player in the world. Jason Day's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan just closed that gap a little bit, though. With a win. So it's just amazing to me that you can watch him hit the ball the way he does, and he can still be the best in the world because his short game is great. And it reminds me when I was younger, and I couldn't hit the ball as good as you or a lot of the older guys I play with, but I just wanted to be able to compete,
mm-hmm,
with you. So I knew that if I get around the green in two, that I could be in every hole, you know.
Right.
So it's, I guess for Jordan Spieth, same thing.
Right. So you can watch some of these guys on the ranging and wonder why they don't all win. And the difference is that part of the game. You get a guy that's averaging, say, 33 or 34 putts, he's not going to survive. You know, Jordan had 9 putts for 9 holes on the back nine. Probably had 27 for the final round, 26 maybe, something like that. 10 under par on putting alone, for example, right?
Yeah.
Makes up for a couple of drives to the right.
Yeah, makes up for everything. Like, guys are missing those 15-footers regularly. He's making them regularly.
Plus, it wears your opponent out. You come down the stretch, and the guy hits it down the middle of the fairway, hits on a green 15 feet, and you knock in a 40-footer after you scraped it out of the trees. This guy misses the 15-footer. It's, even though they don't play match play, that's match play at its finest.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's weird, too. The thing about golf is the full swing is so much different than the putting stroke.
Yeah.
You know, you're hitting the ball both ways, but one you're trying to send it far and high, right, and the other you're just trying to roll it. And so we've seen it before with the great ball strikers that weren't great putters. You know, you have to be a pretty good putter, I think, no matter how good of a ball striker you are, to play on the PGA Tour. Sure. But to be a great putter is a gift. I think that it's almost difficult to become a great putter if you're not already, like, by age 18, 19, considered a great putter. Would you agree with that or no?
Yeah, I don't think it's something you really learn later on.
Yeah.
I think you got it or you don't. You might be able to improve a little bit later on, but to go from poor to excellent, I don't think it's going to happen. You get maybe some better education and tutelage and things, but that's all feel.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess that's like they say, you can't teach feel.
Right.
So, well, Spieth is one of three players with multiple victories this season, go along with Jason Day, who's won three times, and Adam Scott, who won those back-to-back events back in February, I think it was. And Rory just won.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the Irish Open.
So now heading towards these great tournaments we got coming up in the rest of the major season, things are kind of setting up the way we hoped. And we'll talk about the U.S. Open in a second here. Good to see Webb Simpson back. Mm-hmm. I think that it was his first top 10 in all 11 starts he's had this season. So just one top 10 like that makes you jump. He jumped to 101 in the world golf ranking. So kind of.
Right.
Or no, FedEx Cup standing, excuse me. So, but that's the difference between retaining your card and not retaining your card. So, good for him.
So, he's a guy that struggled with the putting rule change.
Yep.
He had an anchored putter before, and he tried to go back to conventional.
When he won the U.S. Open, was it with an anchored putter?
Yes, it was.
Was it?
Yeah. But then he was using a conventional putter since January of this year. But this week, he had the Matt Kuchar style, where it was pinned against his left arm. He was putting that way, okay, which is legal.
Sure.
Okay, and he putted very well.
Well, it's difficult to not putt well and, you know, be in the top 10. So, I mean, you got to at least putt decent. So he found something, you know, with the putter.
Yeah.
And as a former U.S. Open champ.
He's a good player.
You know, heading into the U.S. Open.
Yep.
Martin Piller had his first top 10 of his career. At the Valero Open, where he tied for fourth, and now he tied for sixth at the Colonial. So here's a young guy, most popular for his fact that his wife's a top LPGA player, did pretty well in the Texas stretches. He went to Texas A&M for college. So.
Right. So I wonder what the dialogue is in that house, because they're both playing well. Both haven't had a PGA win or LPGA win, but, boy, they're in a fringe.
Yeah, and they're starting to get some money.
Yes.
You know, that's probably the main thing they're talking about at dinner. Right. And they're also, we're realizing the whole gender wage gap thing, too, because I guarantee you that Martin Piller's top 10 was a lot more lucrative than her second place finish a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, sure was.
So, but that's just, that's not a wage thing as much. I don't think that necessarily, that argument would apply to golf, because, you know, it's the popularity of the tour that generates the revenue, the sponsorship money.
Right.
So, well, Spieth, of course, a Titleist guy. He played the Titleist Pro V1X. His driver was a 915 D2, 9.5 degrees. Three wood, Titleist 915F, 15 degrees. His irons, Titleist TMBs, 4 through 9. And then he uses a Titleist AP2, 714 pitching wedge. Titleist Vokey wedges at 52, 56, and 60 degrees. And a Scotty Cameron SC009 prototype. So, he's a Titleist guy, you're a Titleist guy. Right. Does that make you like Jordan Spieth more than Jason Day with the TaylorMades, or what does Rory play?
Rory plays Nike.
Yeah, so.
I'm not a Nike equipment fan, but I'm a Rory McIlroy fan. So, but Rory could jump ship and be a Titleist guy anytime. Be okay with me.
Well, so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, I shouldn't say that. I don't know if he's unhappy with Nike, but.
I doubt it.
Well, those three guys are all going to be prepping for the season's second major at Oakmont coming up. And it's really shaping up to be a great event. The venue's great, and as we just mentioned, all three top players, Jason Day won at the Players, Spieth wins at the Colonial, Rory wins a personal major at the Irish Open, and so, you know, here we go. Is this, you think, going to be the major that we see a late Sunday showdown between two of those three guys?
Shaping up to be that way, and I think it'd be great theater to have that. I think going into this U.S. Open, it's definitely top-heavy as far as the favorites. I don't see somebody coming from out of the pack, you know, 100-1 long shot.
Not a course like Oakmont.
No, I think it's going to – you're going to see somebody shoot a good round on Thursday. There's some no-name or whatever. But then when it all comes down to Saturday afternoon, Sunday morning, the big names will rise to the top. And then just a matter of how it all shakes out on the back nine.
So you think it'll be one of those opens where plus one or minus one wins?
Could be. I haven't seen much about the course setup. It all depends on the rough and then the firmness of the greens, obviously. They're not going to let this thing get 10, 12 under par. The USGA is not going to allow that.
Right.
Of course, I say that you don't know if somebody's going to shoot, but they're not going to set it up to be that easy. So. And I know these greens have a lot of undulations, all right? So that separates things a little bit. I would think 2 or 3 under par at the most would win.
Yeah, well, that's the way I hope it is, because it's the one special thing about the U.S. Open, I think, is that it's usually one of the few times you get to see golfers play against par on the PGA Tour. Usually it's who can make the most birdies. So,
but the roughs have got to be pretty high. You know, years ago, you used to see these guys hitting rough and have to chip it out sideways. But I think the clubs are better. They're driving the ball so much farther now. Yep. They're hitting more lofted clubs. So a lot of times you won't see them go sideways like they did, say, 20 years ago. A lot of these guys are just going to take the wedge and hit it up there and see what happens.
Well, it's at Oakmont, obviously, which is going to be our Golf J trivia question related to that coming up here in a second. But looking at favorites, you know, I mean, obviously, are you going to think about picking anybody that's out not in the big three that we just mentioned? Or is your pick to win today, is it going to be one of those big three?
If I had to pick to win today, it would absolutely be one of the big three, no doubt.
All right, so it would be for me, too. Which one are you thinking?
Well, I'm going to lean towards Rory McIlroy, because sooner or later I got to get it right. Well, I pick him every week.
Yeah, and
his game's good, no doubt. They're all good. They're all good. So I'm going to pick Rory McIlroy next week when I sit in this chair, or 2 weeks from now when I sit in this chair.
Irregardless of what happens at the Memorial, say, this week?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
unless he hurts his ankle or something, I guess.
Right, sure. You know. Well, I think I got to go with Jason Day. But I'm starting to think to myself, you know, Jordan Spieth, U.S. Open, difficult course. I mean, that guy's probably the best bet. Jason Day is a great putter, probably not quite as good as Jordan Spieth. Who has a better short game? I don't know. Jason Day is pretty solid all around.
He is pretty solid.
The reason I think I picked Day over Spieth for most of the weekly picks when they're both in the tournament is because Day's just prodigious distance. He's like hits it as long as Tiger used to, but more accurately.
Right.
So, I'd have to go with Jason Day, but... You know, I'm kind of stunned watching Spieth the past few weeks struggle with his swing and, you know, contend for two tournaments and winning one.
Right.
So I'm sure he'll be in the mix. You know, I think I feel more confident with Spieth being in the mix on Sunday than the other two.
He's always in the mix.
Yeah.
That's why nobody's going to laugh at you for picking Jordan Spieth. You know, like, what the heck are you thinking, right? So he seems to always be in the top 10. And we laugh at him, or he's playing bad.
Right.
Right. But he seems to be on the leaderboard 85% of the time.
Well, and let's not forget, too, that he legitimately won the Masters. You know, he chunked that. He just imploded. Yes. It was a freak thing.
Right.
And I think this coming back to win at the Colonial, I think that monkey's kind of off his back. He doesn't have to worry about that anymore. But, yeah, amazing. And after coming off a season where he won the FedEx Cup in 2 majors.
Right.
So if he does win the U.S. Open this year, I would assume that would let him overtake Jason Day for world number one again. But I think at that point, you just got to say to yourself, man, this guy is the next Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, Ben Hogan, etc. because it would be just the most phenomenal run since Tiger had the Tiger Slam.
I agree. I think there would be six majors, and he would have won three of the six, right?
It's six majors in...
Since the last Masters, the first Masters he won.
Yeah, so he would have won three and six,
yeah.
Right? And he still would need a British Open and PGA to complete the career Grand Slam, unlike Rory, who needed just the Masters, right. And now Jason Day still looking for his second major.
Right.
So... some odds early on here for the U.S. Open. Jason Day is the favorite at 15-2, followed by Jordan Spieth and Rory at 17-2. So they're not even giving Spieth the advantage over Rory. Now, I don't know if these were adjusted after Sunday or not. But perhaps with the win, Spieth may nudge up there equal or ahead of Day. And then they give you Dustin Johnson at 16-1. And there's a big drop in odds from 17-2 to 16-1. It's almost half.
Yeah.
So Dustin Johnson next at 16-1, followed by Justin Rose 20-1. He's a U.S. Open champ, right? That's his one major, and Ricky Fowler at 20-1, which I think is maybe a little high. And Adam Scott 22-1, Bubba 28-1, Danny Willett, the Masters champ, at 30-1. Imagine if Willett won it, and now all of a sudden he did what Jordan Spieth did last year. So that's kind of a storyline people aren't talking about, but. Yeah. Yeah, we talked about the big three heading into the U.S. Open, but what about, you know, the next 20? Guy like Dustin Johnson or Ricky Fowler?
Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, okay. These guys
Sergio
that we...
Sergio Garcia, you never know.
We expect them to be major champs at some point. Who, you know, who's it going to be?
Right.
Hideki Matsuyama, 30-1.
And Phil Mickelson, again, you never know.
Sure. Yeah, because if he putts well, and... another guy, too, who I was really thought would have a breakout year this year, and maybe, you know, he could do that with a win at the U.S. Open, is Brandon Grace. So
he was in last year's U.S. Open right till the bitter end, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, he was paired with Dustin Johnson, I think.
At Chambers Bay.
Yes.
And it's just a deep, deep pool of talent.
Yes.
Never been better. I think the PGA Tour as a whole never been better. And just a couple names I jotted down here. That you might want to think about maybe is outsiders with a shot at breaking through not only the U.S. Open but maybe later this year. But former President's Cup player Kyung Tae Kim is on quite a tear on the Asian Tour. He won Sunday in Japan, which was his sixth consecutive top three, including three wins and two runners-up. So he's now 37 in the world golf rankings. And never heard of him, you know. I may have noticed him winning some of these events as Golf Channel, you know, just gives you quickly the Asian Tour results, but you know, Kyung Tae Kim, that might be a name to remember, because if you win on any major tour six consecutive top threes and three wins and two runners up, I mean, you're a pretty special player. So I don't think it'll be long before we hear more from him. And then England's Chris Wood won the European Tour's biggest flagship event, the BMW PGA Championship, and is now up to 22nd in the world golf ranking, which would actually put him inside the bubble to make the Ryder Cup team. So there's another guy, Chris Wood. We're talking 22 in the world, and most people probably have never heard of him.
I don't think he plays over here too much.
And we're actually going to talk about this later in the show. The European Tour chief said that they were going to make some major overhauls to the tour, so we'll talk about that a little later. But, you know, again, the BMW PGA Championship being their flagship event would kind of be like the PGA Tour's Players Championship. And, you know, you don't have to watch a lot of golf on TV to know that there's a big difference there in hype and attention that's paid to it.
Sure.
So, all right. Well, let's jump ahead right now to, I don't know if I'd call this a review because this is actually an older product, but I just thought it was such a great bargain that I wanted to share it with our viewers. It's the Breaking 80 IS-400 rangefinder. And now, if you go to their website, you can't even buy this anymore. They have newer models, more expensive models. But this particular model right here is available at Amazon.com right now for a price of $109.99, which if you've done any shopping for rangefinders, you'll know that's quite a deal. And there's the page on Amazon right there. And when I bought mine about 2 weeks ago, it was eligible for Prime membership shipping, which would be free shipping for Prime members, but this particular listing doesn't have it up there, so I don't want to say it's available for Prime shipping, but You might want to look around and see if you can find it on there as a Prime member. So, you know, this isn't going to be much of a review other than saying that when you buy a rangefinder, you want a rangefinder that gives you the distance to the pin, right? And this does that, and so does the Bushnell models that cost $499. So to me, I don't understand why you'd buy anything else unless you want the slope, which is illegal to use. So just the easy use, there's a mode button. You can change it from meters to yards. And other than that, there's two ways to shoot the flag. I just put it over the flag, and there's a little box, and I tap it in there, and it gives you the number. Mm. Or you can focus it on a tree behind the green and hold in the button and scan it across the pin, and the number will change when you go across the pin. So I used it with no problem my first round. I've used it four times. I've used it alongside guys with more expensive rangefinders, and we get the same number. So it's got... what kind of battery is that called in here? It's a pretty easy compartment to get it out of there, though. I might have wrote it down here. Yeah, it's a CR2 3-volt battery, so it's this little one. And it comes included. Right. And you can also found a listing on Amazon to buy a 3-pack for like $9 or $10. So okay. I can't comment on how long the battery will last in this thing because I've only used it for four rounds, but it's a bargain alert.
Sure, sounds like it is.
And it comes with this nice carrying pouch with a belt loop, which I don't see myself wearing this on the belt, but it would actually be pretty innovative if somebody had some way to holster this to the golf cart so it was like on the near your clubs and you could just grab it and put it back.
There's a device.
Is there?
Oh, yeah.
Of course it got to be, right?
It's an accessory, yes.
Now,
that's a good review.
It's more of a bargain alert. All I can say is that it works. And,
yeah.
And that's the thing I don't understand. I mean, I don't know if you agree with me, but... some of these things are $200, $300, $400, and I just want the distance to the pin.
So we're all captivated by logos when it's all said and done.
That's
so
true, too.
Why do we spend $500 on a driver when there's as good a one for $199 someplace, right? Because it doesn't say Titleist or Callaway or, in this case, Bushnell.
Yep, right? It's breaking 80, which, I'm always happy to break 80.
Right.
So it's a weird name for a company. Now, when the rangefinders first came out, I said I never want one of these because right. I really thought part of the fun of the game was to figure out, you know, how far away you were from the pin, given right. Whether a yardage book or the yardage markers or just line of sight. I thought that was part of the game. Mm. But the USGA said no, that you can use these, and so now I think you're at a disadvantage.
Everybody else
have one, do you?
I do have one.
Oh, you do have one now.
Right. Especially if you get it a little bit offline. Right, you're not going to find a yardage marker in a lot of places that we sometimes tend to hit a golf ball.
Which is part of the challenge, I think.
It is part of the challenge, but it speeds up play.
Yeah, that's true. Right. You don't have to pace it off anymore to the nearest 150.
I think sooner or later you're going to see the PGA Tour will adapt and allow it to be used as well.
See, that's rough to me because that lessens the importance of the caddy.
I just think the pace of play is why they will do it.
No, that's true, too.
Because there's sometimes that it takes some... what seems like 20 minutes to get a yardage.
And then you just pick it up and shoot it.
But the other benefit to those is, you know, a lot of golf courses aren't marked all that well with yardage markers. They might have a 100, 150 someplace buried in the ground. But the sprinkler heads sometimes aren't marked. And some of the older golf courses don't have sprinkler heads. They have those, the ones you had to jam the sprinkler system down in and lock them in.
Spigots, yeah, they're not giving you yardages.
There's nothing in there. But, like, we have them at our place with yardage markers on them.
Yep.
Not everybody has that.
Well, they're kind of obsolete now, those yardage markers, too, if everybody has one
everyone
of these.
Everyone has one of those, yes.
And, I just got sick of borrowing everybody else's, I think, all the time. And then I got to the point where when I was in a group with somebody that didn't have one, I was like, oh, man. Hmm. You know, so I've gotten away from figuring out the distance. But one last thing about the Breaking 80 IS-400, I measured a pin from 352 yards away. Not that I was planning a shot, but I was just wanting to see. And it may have been able to go farther, but if it can measure inside 350, then I'm good.
So probably not a measurement you're looking for anyways. But
and it's a six times magnifying effect here, and it's a manual focus here. I never have to focus it in round to shoot the pin, but if I want to look a couple fairways over, it's maybe some of the ladies playing or you know, or whatever's going on over there. Not that I would do that. You'll use the manual focus here by the eyepiece. So it comes with this super sweet carrying bag, and I keep it up front in the cup holder. I think most people do that.
Right.
But
I sometimes put mine in my, you got cargo shorts, whatever, you put it in my side
pocket. Oh, put it right in the pocket. Oh, yeah, okay.
Because it isn't, they're not that heavy.
Yeah, this one actually weighs 1 pound.
It's probably less than your cell phone.
Right.
Right.
Yep. So. Yep. And it's a pretty small form factor, too, which I like.
Yep.
I've seen some of the bigger ones, and it's just like, man, you can't, you have to keep them in the basket of the cart.
Yes.
So.
Which yeah, some of them have too much going on. That's overkill.
Well, let's move ahead to the Golf J Trivia Challenge for the week. And you can tweet your answers to @TheGolfJ on Twitter. Be the first person to tweet the answer and win a Golf J hat. So, question this week is, the U.S. Open has been held at Oakmont 8 times. Who won the first Open at Oakmont in 1927? And I didn't include the answer in your script this week. I thought maybe it's in case you wanted to take a guess, but we'll give the answer at the end of the show.
Okay.
So who won the first Open at Oakmont in 1927? Hmm. So moving ahead to the 8 times at Oakmont. That's in 1927, so almost one a decade. Not quite, you know, right. Like probably points. 7-8
per decade.
But it's
been a while since it's been there, though, right? It probably had a couple times.
Cabrera won the last time. And it helped Cabrera. And when was that? It was in the 2000s.
It was.
I think I have it here, actually. Yeah, Cabrera won it in 2007. So it's been 10 years. It's been a decade.
Right.
And as long as they're throwing courses like Chambers Bay in, it'll be more than another decade. And it'll also be longer till we get another major championship at Rochester at Oak Hill. I like stick with the courses that got you there, the true venerable homes of American golf for the U.S. Open.
Right.
Experiment a little bit with the PGA. So, hey, we talked off the top about selecting the right clubs for your game.
Mm-hmm.
You're our equipment guru. Somebody comes to you and says, hey, I'm thinking about getting a new set of irons.
Right.
And this doesn't only pertain to irons, it could be drivers,
sure.
Could be a putter, could be wedges. But you know, what is the main advice that you give them?
Well, the first thing I would do is go to get fitted professionally by somebody who's been trained to do that, to get the right grip size, the right shaft length, the right lie angles, etc. After that, it becomes the choice of the clubs that you want to buy, which could be to the club fitter, they don't mind which one you choose. They're going to represent everybody. So if you wanted Ping or Titleist or Callaway, you can get those. I think what you need to do, though, is make sure you're choosing the right for your irons for your ability, because there's a lot of performance enhancements clubs out there that make it a little bit easier to play, which makes it more fun. So if you're a 30 handicapper and you want to buy blades, it's a mistake.
Yeah.
If you're a 2 handicap and you want to buy some thick-soled iron, that's a mistake. It's not going to help you any. Right, so that club fitter can also help you select which clubs. There's probably like Ping has, say, 7 or 8 models of irons. There's probably 1 or 2 per handicap category. Like, say, a 0 to 5, there's a couple of sets that would be best for you. And 6 to 11, there's probably a couple sets. You know, some of them are helpful in getting the ball up in the air a little bit more. Some have a thicker sole, so it won't dig into the ground, take big divots.
Yeah.
Some have bigger faces as well, that gives you a little bit bigger sweet spot. You know, and a guy who hits the ball really well doesn't want that. He wants an iron that he can move the ball a little bit left to right, right to left, which a blade is more advantageous for that.
That's why I like blades. I like and I'm certainly don't have a classic golf swing, and I don't hit the sweet spot.
Right.
I miss the sweet spot more than I hit it on my irons.
Right.
But I like the way it feels when I miss it. I like the way I can, and I like working it high and low, or trying to.
Mm-hmm.
And I found with and I haven't had like a cavity back set in years, because my last experience might have been like the TaylorMade burner irons, I think. And I also felt like when you did hit the sweet spot, that ball just skyrocketed, you know, over the green sometimes.
Right.
And so I didn't like that. And, of course, the technology's changed. And the one thing I like about the newer irons, a lot of the game improvement irons, when you look at it, it looks like a blade from above.
Right. So, you get the classic look, which I like the looks of a golf club that has that classic look to it. I don't like the there's a couple sets made by some people that are very thick on the top line. I never like that style. Going back, Ping makes a good golf club. Go back 15, 20 years, I never liked the looks of a Ping golf club.
Like the Ping I2s or anything?
Yeah. But they were as good as anything being made today.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I know people that still use the exact same clubs.
You're not going to find anything better on the market as far as playability goes. But you had to like that look, right? Yeah. I never did. But now you can buy some pretty good cavity back clubs that have a classic look to them that will give you some performance enhancement out of them. So if you catch something on a tour of the heel, you get, say, 80% of what you would have got off a sweet spot.
And I don't know if some people listening to this show have never heard of progressive irons, but I think that's the way to go.
It's a good choice.
And I kind of kick myself for not doing that with my latest purchase of irons, but that's where you'll get your long irons, a 4, a 5, and a 6, and sometimes even a 7.
Maybe, yep.
Is cavity-backed, and then the low irons being the 8, 9, and wedge are a blade. Right. So you get the best of both worlds.
You do. They've done a nice job with that concept. And most manufacturers have that concept now.
Yeah, and I had a set of Wilson Staff progressives back a long time ago when I guess that wasn't so commonplace.
Right.
And surprised I didn't go that route again.
So Wilson was the leader of the pack. They were just out there too soon.
And do they still make irons, Wilson Staff?
Honestly, I don't know.
If they do, they don't market them too well anymore because I can't think of if they do.
I want to say Padraig Harrington uses Wilson for some reason, and I'm thinking Kevin Streelman and Ricky Barnes. I think he uses Wilson.
Yeah, I think Barnes does. I think you're right.
Right. But after that, that's a stretch to say they still do.
Yeah, but I'm positive Harrington did.
Right. And 25 years ago, they were probably 25% of the golf clubs were Wilson.
Well, the other thing is when you go to someone who knows what they're doing, again, you can say you walk into Dick's, you may get a great club fitter that's working there, or you may not. If you don't, maybe you should back off, come again in another shift inconspicuously, but you can find great club fitters there. A lot of club pros are great club fitters.
You can go and get specs at these places. They'll give you the specs. You should have 2 degrees upright, whatever. If you get that done twice in the exact same specs, then those numbers are right for you. But if you go to fitter A and you get 2 degrees upright and fitter B and you get 2 degrees flat, something's wrong.
Yeah.
You better go to the third guy, get a third opinion. Right?
Sure.
So
yeah, it's always a big purchase nowadays too, so you want to make sure you're comfortable with your purchase, so it's good to get somebody advising you. But at the end of the day, you got to get something that you feel good over, that looks good to you over.
Right.
And you got to also give any new equipment a chance. I think too many times somebody will buy a new set and I'll play with them, or a new club and I'll play with them. And after one round or two rounds, you're like, I shouldn't have bought that club. I can't hit it. And
well, if you just got fitted for a set too for the first time, you had another set that weren't fitted for you and you learned how to hit them.
Right.
Now you got a set that are basically all identical except the lofts, right? So you're going to have to be patient is absolutely right.
So
it's not like that new putter that you go out and you buy it and you make everything the first round.
Yeah.
And 2 weeks later it's in the garage.
It's a little different with irons.
Yes.
You don't hit every shot great for the first round. You play them usually. There's some adjustment period. So.
Right.
Well, coming up this week, it's going from Texas to Dublin, Ohio for the Memorial.
Yep.
And I love this tournament. It's one of my favorite tournaments. And, honestly, it's called the Memorial. It's not called the Dean and DeLuca. If the last week's tournament was called the Colonial, sponsored by Dean and DeLuca,
right?
I just think that alone makes it a bigger tournament. So this is the Memorial.
Right.
Muirfield Village, Jack Nicklaus's designed it in 1974. If you're looking to watch it on TV, you got Thursday through Friday coverage from 3:30 to 6:30 on the Golf Channel, Saturday coverage on the Golf Channel from 12:30 to 2:30, and then 3 to 6 on CBS, Sunday noon to 2 o'clock on the Golf Channel, and then 2:30 to 6 on CBS. You might remember last year David Lingmuirth outlasting Justin Rose in an extended playoff.
Mm-hmm.
Went several holes. So Langworth won it last year. Hideki Matsuyama got his probably the biggest win of his career here in 2014. 2013, Kuchar, which is that the last time he's won? Because
they said he hasn't won in 2 years, so it's awful close to the last one. And I thought he won Harbortown was the last one.
Yeah, you're probably right. 2013 is a while ago. And then 2012, Tiger. You know, one of the Memorial. A lot of people speculate Tiger be coming back for the Memorial, but it doesn't look to be that way.
Right.
And if he doesn't come back for the Memorial, he's not going to play in the U.S. Open.
I figured he would play at least once before the Open. But the Open's 2 weeks out yet, right?
But to come back at Oakmont?
Well, I know, but what's in the middle? There's nothing in the middle?
Oh, there's some. There's the St. Jude. Yeah, there's a Memorial, which is the, and then the St. Jude Classic in Tennessee.
Memphis, yep.
And then the U.S. Open.
I don't see him playing in Memphis. I really thought he'd play this week.
I did, too, until I saw the shots he hit at Congressional.
Oh, it was all a ploy to get your attention. It worked.
Oh, so he's playing coy. He's trying to maybe play possum
he's trying
with
to
the golf
get
world.
Get the odds up so we make a little bet.
He's ranked over 500th in the world now, so it's also funny to think about how much hope there is that he'll come back and contend in the majors. But, again, a lot of that, too, is that he just hasn't played. You can't not play for that long a stretch and not tumble in the rankings, so... big purse too. $8.5 million. Winner gets 1.53, and world number one Jason Day is only the tip of a lineup that brings together the top five in the world rankings and 21 of the top 30. Number three Rory McIlroy, number four Bubba Watson both return after 1 year layoffs, didn't play last year. After returning. Another guy returned after a year's hiatus is Phil Mickelson, whose best finish was a tie for fourth in 2006. Hall of Famer Ernie Els, who won the 2004 edition of the Memorial, makes his 23rd consecutive start, and he owns five other top eight finishes at the Memorial, including runner-up in 2000. So a major-like feel
Very
for
good
this.
Feel. And it's a little bit of both things happen here. It's a little bit prep for the U.S. Open, but it's respect for Jack Nicklaus.
Right.
It's probably the big reason everybody's there overall. Because they'd probably take, if this was the St. Jude Classic week, they wouldn't be playing St. Jude.
No, there's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about it. But this is the sixth major. Now, I think when you go that deep, you're competing with other world golf events and stuff. But, you know, you had the Players a few weeks ago. Right. This is almost, to me, on par with the Players.
Yeah, if you take the four majors out of the discussion, this is up there. As good as the rest, right? The Players, the Arnold Palmer Tournament at Bay Hill has got a big, big image and a big following. This one, I think Colonial's big. Some of those old-time
the
golf
Dean
courses.
The Dean DeLuca.
The Colonial, we'll go with that, all right? But this is certainly a huge tournament. And Byron Nelson event was huge for many, many years because of Byron Nelson. And this is going to be big because of Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah.
And it will be for many years.
I agree. I also really think the name has a lot to do with it.
Yep.
Because it doesn't change from year to year.
I hear they have good milkshakes too when you get done. That's their thing? That's their thing.
Jason Day's adopted hometown.
Oh, that's right. He is Columbus, yeah.
His wife is from Columbus.
Columbus, right.
Yeah. So he's coincidentally not done very good there. Or maybe it's not a coincidence. I don't know. But he's the only 3-time winner on tour this season. But he'll try to win in front of his friends and wife Ellie's family, as she grew up about an hour north of Columbus. So it's his best finish at Murfield Village was 27th in 2009, which tests my theory that if Jason Day's in the tournament, I'm going to take him to win. But I'm going to take him to win because
Right.
If he's in, I feel like it's a good bet.
He's a different guy now than he was in 2009.
But he played last year and probably didn't do too well. I mean, that was his best
finish. Oh, that was
best
his best finish. Wasn't his best finish.
So he's played since
wasn't
then.
Wasn't the last time. Okay.
I personally think, though, too, that, well, maybe not. Maybe he's looking past the Memorial towards the U.S. Open. And maybe that. But I would think that he might, you know,
I think with his recent
try
success,
a different approach.
He's not looking past anything now.
Yeah, that's true. And
he's got
he
going.
Took a different approach at the Players. He had not performed well at the Players at Sawgrass traditionally, and he won this year.
Right.
So, Yeah, I tell you, though, watching Spieth this weekend makes me want to pick him because I know that even if he doesn't win, he's going to be in the mix. So
you're in the fence, aren't you?
But I'm taking Jason Day. So who do you think?
This week?
Yeah.
All right, so I didn't check the field. I'm going to take Ryan Palmer.
He was in great position to win this week at the Colonial.
I assume he's in the field.
Yeah, no, he is. He is. Yep.
I just that guy, Tee to Green, is pretty darn good. His putting's a little bit suspect. But he's due for a breakout. Him and Kevin Chappell, my other favorite golfer this year.
Yep, Chappell. You know, looking for some sleepers, if we're going to talk sleepers, I like Russell Knox. You know, he's like Ling Merth. I think this could be, you know, he won the World Golf Championship in China, but that's hard to count that as like a, that's the worst of the World Golf Championships because of the time of the year and the location.
Right.
It doesn't feel that much like a major to me, like a big one.
Russell Knox is the guy that had the problem on 17 at Sawgrass, right? Hit a couple balls and made nine.
Sean Stefani. Or no, it was Russell Knox. Yeah, which if he hadn't done that, he would have been right in the mix.
I'm trying to make sure I got the right guy.
Yeah, it was Knox, and he kind of laughed that off.
He did. He did really a nice did job. Great no job. Handled it very well.
So usually when guys have that kind of demeanor and he has tasted victory at a high level before, you know, I'll pick Knox as a potential sleeper. And, you know, your boy McIlroy owns two top 10 finishes and five visits at Muirfield, so it could be the one. But you like Ryan Palmer over Rory?
I like Ryan Palmer. He's a hot golfer. He's in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So this is going to be fun to watch. The Memorial, like I say, Golf Channel on Thursday, Friday, and then early coverage on Golf Channel. And then CBS has it again. And do you agree that CBS is the best, or are you an NBC guy with Johnny Miller?
Oh, no. CBS is by far the best. No comparison. And this golf course is spectacular. You can see some great views. It is really maintained very well.
It's like the I would consider it the Augusta of the North.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I totally agree.
It
the rough is thicker, but other than that, you look at the condition of this place, it is spectacular.
The greenery, yes. And the majestic trees, and they generally mow with thin, because they're walk mowing, but thin mow lines. It looks a little different than some of the other courses. It's distinctive.
There's a little winding creek that runs through there. He also uses that wide tongue rake on the bunkers now, where the ball doesn't sit up really nice.
There's big grooves, so if you, it's like 50-50.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was pretty controversial. Are they going to do that again this year, you think?
I think they've done it the last 2 years at least there, so I'd expect to see it again.
And that's something totally unique. You don't see that anywhere else. I don't think I've ever seen that anywhere else.
No. I just like the looks of the golf course on television. It's absolutely gorgeous.
It's one of my favorites, and a lot of it might be the time of the year too, but I love all the Northeast tournaments, whether it's a major held here in the Northeast or the regular tour stops here, even in Connecticut, and the FedEx playoffs have a couple stops here in the Northeast, and because you can relate to it, it feels like the golf courses we play every day just because of the types of trees and the types of grasses and the type of weather. And so it's great.
You're right. It's not that far away.
Yeah. Man. You didn't play Muirfield. You went on a trip. I played
Inverness and Firestone.
Inverness.
I've been on the grounds at Muirfield, but we couldn't get on the golf course.
Were you there just not during
the
tournament?
We were just driving through and took a chance.
Geez, you know, if we're going to go to a PGA Tour tournament, that's one that's a seven-hour drive, right?
I would think so. That's about it.
Yeah, from here in upstate
New York. 4 to get
to
Cleveland or 5 to get to Cleveland and a little bit from there.
Something to think about.
Yep.
But we have a senior PGA coming to Oak Hill soon, right?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think we have a senior PGA coming to Oak Hill, but nothing other than that is been announced yet, right?
Right, so the PGA is not going to announce anything until after their event this year. They don't want to take any thunder away from what they're doing.
Sure.
So,
well, speaking of trying to create thunder to what they're doing, the European Tour has been struggling in recent years with their top players playing on the American Tour, the PGA Tour, and the European Tour chief Keith Pelly was on Golf Channel Thursday, and he said this: the schedule will be different. it will be talking about a complete tour overhaul is what he said by 2018. So that would be not next season, but the season after, complete tour overhaul. So he says the schedule will be different. It will be more friendly from a travel perspective for the players. There'll be a number of events where the prize funds will be significantly increased, and there will be more playing opportunities for all our members, a different schedule for sure, and a different players first philosophy. So that statement doesn't seem like a major overhaul to anything, but what does the European Tour need to do to become more relevant to the golf world?
That's a good question. So you take a guy like Paul Casey, like this year is playing in the U.S. He's not even part of the European Tour. He's not even going to be on the Ryder Cup team because he's not a member of the European Tour. But he's from England, I believe, but he's from Europe anyhow. They come over here, there's more money, the weather's better, the conditions are better. All right. And the European Tour, geographically, is all over the place.
Yeah, that's where I think they started shooting themselves in the foot, where they stopped being a European Tour and started being everywhere but the U.S. Tour.
Yeah.
They play everywhere.
Because they play the race to Dubai is their big thing, right?
Which is their final. That's not in Europe. It's in the Middle East. So.
Yeah. So I think they got some geographical concerns, and I don't know if they can get the prize money raised or not through sponsorships. I have no idea. They got some big names over there, but a lot of them aren't necessarily in Europe. Dubai's got all the money, seems like, or Qatar, those places.
Yeah, so. That's probably why they ended up there.
And they got weather problems. You watch it on TV more times than not. It's not good weather.
In Dubai?
No,
everywhere.
European tour.
Yeah.
You know, God, it's awful. Not that we don't get some bad weather here in the States, but.
I think one of the advantages they have in towards being relevant is the fact that we can watch their final rounds in the mornings.
Yes.
You know, we can watch live European golf at odd times when you might be more likely to be home.
Yes.
But still, I'm not compelled to watch it unless Rory's in the leaderboard. Right. So it really does come down to keeping their stars there. But again, they want to be competing for FedEx points, Cup points. It's almost like they just pay lip service to play the minimum amount on the European Tour. So if I was their tour chief, I would try to create two or three events placed in optimal spots on the schedule that can attract U.S. players.
Right.
So you can get a top field. Because if the BMW Championship truly is the flagship event in the European Tour against the Colonial, the Dean and DeLuca, then you think that maybe you could get a lot of American players to go over there or other top international players like Jason Day. But you need probably a huge purse to do that.
Right.
But that'd be something I would wake up early to watch, you know, on Sunday morning, a final round where Jason Day was in against Bubba Watson, you know.
I do enjoy the British Open during that week because it's on in the morning. I like that a lot. It's that one week year I enjoy it. So I don't know if the U.S. would go over there and play necessarily. Here's a year that's a Ryder Cup year, and most people want to play in the Ryder Cup. So they're going to give up Ryder Cup points from the Colonial or Dean and DeLuca, whatever you're going to call
it. And FedEx Cup points.
To go over there and play something that doesn't qualify. You know, then you got the Olympics hanging in the shadows a little bit, although that's you can only send four players to the Olympics at the most. I don't know. There's going to be some big attractive mechanism to get the U.S. people to give up a Colonial event or something along those lines.
Yeah, I wouldn't schedule it against the Colonial. Right. I might schedule their flagship event against the St. Jude wouldn't work because the U.S. Open's the next week, so you got to get creative.
Seems like they got to get maybe two tournaments back-to-back where when we travel, we're gone for 2 weeks because the travel stinks.
Yeah.
You know, you got just from New York alone, you got a six-hour flight. From California, it's got to take you 12 hours, I would guess.
That's why I like the Scottish Open's a good example of an event that attracts some players because they're already over for the British.
Yes.
So maybe you could even have them on either side of the British Open, have your two flagship events maybe on the European Tour. But, I agree. Keep it in Europe, not the Middle East and not China. Doesn't feel like the European
Tour.
Their
expansion's probably hurt.
And a lot of the courses they play, too, are American-style courses instead of the true European-style. You know, they don't play a lot of links courses on their tour stops along the way.
No. I agree.
So that I think that might be something that would give it.
But those courses seem to play slow. They don't seem to be the greens aren't 14. You know, they seem to be, I don't know, 10s.
Oh, yeah, it's
10s.
Not pretty. It's not pretty.
No.
I don't think compared to, you know, looking at, if you're watching golf on TV, I think got to be, but it's unique. So being unique sets you apart a little bit. But yeah, it's a tough thing because, like you say, the FedEx Cup has gotten so big, and the purses have gotten so big, and the stakes have gotten so high on the American Tour. So it's almost like the European Tour has been relegated to a minor league status.
And is there, we don't know if there's like tax implications that would force somebody to come to live in Florida rather than live in England.
Well, I think that has a lot to do with it. No income tax in Florida, a lot of tours. That's PGA Tour Pros, that's a great place to live.
Is that true for somebody who has a visa of some sort? I don't know all that stuff. So, but I think the European Tour is going to have to make some wholesale changes if they think they're going to compete with us. I'd be more concerned about us losing the LPGA Tour to a worldwide Asian type tour right now, because they're not going to get a lot of American sponsors. I think we got just the opposite.
Yeah, I think
on the ladies' side.
I think if you could be in a perfect world, be like the king of the golf world, I would combine the European Tour with the PGA Tour, but that would never happen because we already have so many established PGA Tour stops. You're not going to see many of them give it up.
Right.
And the PGA Tour, frankly, is proven to be superior, so why would they want to merge with the European Tour? But the way everything's going globally now, the global economy and everything, it doesn't, you know, the NFL looking at putting teams in Europe and stuff, it seems like you could combine it and all the best golfers in the world. Less opportunity, though, for golfers. So, you know, if there's only one tour, I guess.
Well, I don't know. They could have multiple events going on each week, different locations.
Yeah.
You haven't got to have just one event. But there's going to be different levels of prominence. You know, you're going to have the John Deere competing with the BMW, for example, which, well, I'm going to go to the John Deere because I'm not that good, but I can make some money because all the big guys are going to go play in the BMW.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like a web.com tour kind of built in with it.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the official changes are. They say it's by 2018, so that would be soon.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying watching the NCAA Golf Championships on Golf Channel.
Yeah.
That's some nice programming that Golf Channel found itself. You know, it's engaging. And I've heard so many people talk about it around the course. You know, hey, did you watch that chip in, that Sandy, the Washington?
The bunker.
So, it's exciting. There's nothing better than team match play golf, I think.
Right. And I think the qualifiers getting into it are exciting as well. I left. It was on television when I left.
The men play this week. Washington Huskies won last week for the women, and now the men's is this week.
Right.
And
so after tonight, they get down to the final eight. But they crown an individual champion tonight.
Right.
All right. But it's amazing how the team scores fluctuate so fast because four out of five scores count. Each team brings five players.
Mm-hmm.
But all four can make a bogey.
And
you go down four strokes, or all four can make a birdie, and it's flipping around. The people on the bubble, it's interesting. In fact, that poor girl from Oklahoma State last week, needed to make a par on 18 to get her team in and made triple bogey.
So you let your team down.
Yeah,
that's what's engaging. But you want to win so much more for your team, but you're also scared of being the one that blows it for your team. Because if you as a golfer, you make a mistake and blow it for yourself, that hurts. But when you blow it for a bunch of other guys on the team, different than other team sports too, because you can drop a pass in football and you can't point to that as why you'd win. There's just too much going on. But on the field all game long, but in golf, you know, it's right there for the world to see, a lot of pressure. And I think it's great television.
So do I. I'd recommend the viewers to watch that. Tomorrow it takes it down to the final two. They play 36 holes tomorrow, two matches.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wednesday night, well, it's on the West Coast, so it probably comes on about 7 o'clock. That'll be the finals. But it's always entertaining. It's nail-biting. And their kids.
Yeah, and some of these names you're going to see on the PGA Tour in a few years. It's not the bulk of them, you probably won't, but there'll be, you know, one or two. I mean, all these, we talked about some great collegiate players tonight, like Jordan Spieth.
Yes, one year he played. They won. Texas won.
And Martin Piller, we mentioned he went to Texas. So there's a ton of talent out there. And that's the other thing, too, is like the women, the quality of the shot making in some of those women's matches.
Yep.
It's world class.
Sure it is.
So
a year ago now, Bryson DeChambeau won the individual, which is getting crowned tonight. And he's had a whirlwind year after all that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the level of play that's coming out of these events.
So now we lost a half our viewers because they're flicking the channel over to the Gulf.
I said tomorrow, watch it.
Well, luckily, hey, we're about out of time here, so you can flick it over to the Gulf Channel now, or maybe Game 7, Oklahoma City and Golden State. But coming up this week on GolfJ.com, we're going to have an interview on Thursday with the founder of Even Roll Putters. That's going to be great. I've been using my Game Golf device here diligently. I think I got 13 or 14 rounds in. There it is. I couldn't get it out of the pouch. So the shot tracking mechanism here in platform Game Golf. We had CEO John McGuire on the show a couple weeks ago. And after that, we got this, and I've been using it. Going to have a full review of Game Golf coming up on Golf J. And, of course, we'll be back here next Monday night. So, Brownie, thanks for sitting in.
What about the trivia question?
Oh, good call. We almost forgot the trivia question. Here it is. The U.S. Open has been held at Oakmont 8 times. Who won the first Open in 1927?
Horton Smith.
It's a good guess for any 1927 golf question, but the correct answer is Tommy Armour.
Tommy Armour.
Yeah.
Wow.
Tommy Armour the first, I assume.
Yeah, because the third's on the senior tour now.
Yeah,
right?
Which is crazy.
Tommy Armour.
And then also other winners at Oakmont, 1935, Sam Parks Jr., and 1953, Ben Hogan. It really is. This is a great list of golfers. 1962, Jack Nicklaus. 1973, Johnny Miller. 1983, Larry Nelson. Remember Larry Nelson? Yep. 1994, Ernie Els. And 2007, Angel Cabrera. So I assume this year will produce a fantastic champion to go along with the likes of Tommy Armour and Ernie Els and company there, and Ben Hogan and Jack Nicklaus.
Yep.
So thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
And thanks to everybody for spending some time with us on the GolfJ.com podcast. Connect with us online at Twitter at TheGolfJ, on Instagram at The_GolfJ, and we're on Facebook. Search for us and just type in golfj.com on Facebook and we'll pop up. All of our episodes and the best of the wide world of golf on the web can be found at golfj.com. We'll be back next Monday night at 9 p.m. to talk about the Memorial. Until then, hit them long, not often. GolfJ.com.